Welcome to Biz Talk, where I bring you real strategies from leaders who've lived the pressure, build the systems, and learn lessons the hard way. And goodness, I know a lot about that. I'm Ryan Herpin, and today we're talking about what separates busy growth from healthy growth. My guest is Chris Meredith, a veteran leader with 4 decades of leadership experience, known for blending real-world execution with deep systems thinking. You know, he leads MCS, Meredith Consulting Services, and also serves as COO for CyrusWorks, partnering with executives, boards, and senior teams to build value-driven transformation that actually holds under stress. So Chris, thank you so much for joining me today. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, it's awesome to be here. Thank you. I'm very excited about it.
It's great to get to talk to somebody with the amount of experience and expertise that you have. You know, we're both in the same field for the most part. And to be able to sit with somebody and soak up some of this knowledge, ask the good questions, I'm genuinely excited for this.
Well,
I might learn something today. It's going to help serve somebody later.
I actually may learn more than you today.
we'll see. But, you know, today, diving into this, you know, I kind of want to set this up as, you know, leadership under real constraints, you know, where decisions have consequences. You know, teams need clarity and culture can't be, you know, a posture on the wall, like a poster on the wall. You know, I'll anchor the conversation in how you translate military-grade discipline into boardroom-ready execution.
Yeah.
I want to lay that foundation there so that our audience has something to really kind of tie to and relate with, because here's one of the things about that military-grade discipline that I understand, and that's sometimes you can lose humanity in the mix. And if I've ever learned anything in business, it's as soon as you take the human side of business out, culture falls apart.
It does.
People are no longer there for a career, they're there for a job. And that is when things go sideways, the bottom line gets impacted, and it becomes a revolving door of a business. So to dive right in, I want to get to some of the big questions. And, you know, when I look back at your career, what's, you know, the earliest hard lesson that still shows up in how you lead today?
The number one lesson that I learned, and I still teach it, I still preach it today, is assumptions. Mm-hmm. I absolutely went into the world thinking that and assuming that ultimately everybody was going to understand what I was saying, everybody was going to want what I wanted, and that everybody would just come to me rather than me going to them.
Yeah.
And so when I eliminated that assumption and I realized I needed to go to them, I needed to communicate with them the way they heard it, and I needed to make sure they understood it, then life began to change. So assumptions is my biggest one.
I could not agree with you more on that. As far as that's such a major thing that, well, it's easy to overlook.
Yeah.
If we're being completely honest, you know, when you're in the midst of things, you're in the grind and you're moving, it's easy to make assumptions based on previous experiences, right?
That's, it is.
That's what some people would try to call wisdom, but wisdom is never assuming, right? So
that's right.
A concept I try to operate from is if I give 100% and expect nothing in return, it automatically eliminates those assumptions of, okay, if I do XYZ, they're just going to do this, or they're going to want XYZ. But that's some wisdom right there, because I'm still struggling with that at times.
You know,
assuming that
are.
People might get the point or get the message, or they might stick with a system that we implemented.
Right.
Can't manage what you don't measure. But you know, you've seen success and failure. You know, what's a failure that, you know, really upgraded your leadership? Because this is a tough kind of concept, you know, learning from your failures and growing from that. A lot of people, when they make a mistake, they kind of want to crawl into a hole and hide. But what's one of those failures that kind of really helped you grow and upgrade your leadership operating system, not just your strategy?
Well, in the beginning, leadership to me was about telling people what to do. It was about having a skill that could do the things that you were teaching people to do. And so that's where the assumptions come in, that I just assumed everybody would want what I wanted. And I really didn't have a lot of experience in that. So over the years, as time went on, and began to grow in leadership and my career began to progress, I'd taken a job with a very large company. And I was a senior VP with that company, and I believed that I could accomplish everything that needed to be accomplished on a shoestring budget. Mm-hmm. So my communication with the owner of the company was, I can do this. And I used what I call the Apollo 13 theory. You get back to Earth with what you have, you know. And I still believe in that. Yeah. That's still a good theory to have if you are on a shoestring budget. But instead of communicating the actual needs that that I needed, and instead of communicating and making sure people were not only trained and taught, but educated, and that's a different subject.
Yes.
We can come to that later. But instead of doing that, I made the mistakes of assuming that I could lead the system and I could do it the way that I wanted to do it, and everybody would just fall in place back to those assumptions. And so it really created a lot of havoc, and it really didn't bring the results that it needed to bring. So
I would say that is a gold bit of advice. And you explained it really well. Before, you know, we got to start filming the episode here, we had a little bit of a chat, and I got to explain kind of an experience I had that's real similar. You know, my mentor told me, you know, you can solve problems in this company, but the one rule is you can't solve it yourself. You can only solve them through others. And it taught me, okay, I might have an idea, I might have an ideal solution, but I did learn the hard way that if I try to implement it, it won't stick.
Right.
It's when other people buy into it and they feel they're a part of it, that's when it really grabs a hold and it works. And a lot of us have to learn things the hard way, right? But you know, someone once told me, if you want to go fast, go by yourself.
Yeah.
If you want to go far, go with others.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, one man cannot really be an army. But, you know, diving into this a little bit more, what do most executives must misunderstand about alignment? And what do you personally look for to prove alignment is actually real?
Most executives think that agreement is alignment.
Ooh.
And while agreement is a part of alignment, agreement by itself is not. So they communicate, they send a message, they go through email, they do speeches, they do all of these things. And so they make that assumption that everybody is totally in line with their culture, their values, all of those type things. And so what I look for is patterns. I look for flows. I look for communication. I look for how the system, when I call it a system, and I want to clarify, it's actually a living system.
Like an ecosystem.
Because there is a difference between a structured system and a living system,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And so as a result of that, I look for those patterns that flows in that system or within the people within the system. And so as a result of that, so many of us actually just assume because I said it, they got it.
Yep.
And so that's a huge mistake that they make on a regular basis. You're younger than me, so you happen to get it a lot earlier than I do.
Very, very lucky to have taken my hard knocks
early
on so I can try to grow from it. But, you know, like we've talked about before, you know, earlier before this is, you never really stop learning.
No,
If you stop learning, you fall into that realm of assumption everything else pays the price.
It's
not just you, it's your clients, it's people around you, it's those that trust in your leadership that start to suffer because an assumption is a great way to cut somebody out of the equation.
Right, right.
But, you know, you work with boards and senior leaders. What's the fastest way you diagnose whether an organization has a people problem or a strategy problem or even, you know, system problems?
Map the system. So that's the key to it. You know, when you really break it down and start looking at what a system is and you start mapping it, you really can see the flaws within that system. A lot of people think that when you say systems thinking that it's an automatic connection of everything connects. But number one, everything is not relevant. And number two, the things that are, there's quite often disconnects in there. So if you really want to see where the mistakes are at or whether it's a people problem or a system problem, look at the system itself. Just map it.
Yeah, I think that's something that I learned when, you know, dealing with some of the bigger, more complex and confusing type organizations. I learned, okay, there's time you got to take a step back, look at the big picture, map the inputs, outputs, and all the really important pieces of either operation, information, communication.
Right.
And without that key kind of map, it's really easy to overlook breakdowns, redundancies, and things of that nature. So inputs, outputs. I try to keep it cardboard and crayons is kind of my methodology, right? You know, if I put you in front of a leadership team that's really scaling fast, what's the first conversation you force them to have, even if it's extremely uncomfortable?
I go back to looking at the system itself. And I look at the capacity of the system. Because one of the false signals of growth is the fact that everything's okay. And so, for instance, if it's a sales organization and they think that because their sales are great, their revenue's looking good today, everything is fine. But my question for them is do you have the capacity to make the decisions as the system begins to expand?
Ooh.
Because if the capacity is not there, the system is going to blow up. It's going to fall apart. And so, because it's going to get to a place it can't handle it anymore. Decisions are not going to be made correctly. The flow is not going to work right. And so I look at that capacity. If the capacity is not there, then we need to make a change.
You know, I think you're really Johnny on the spot with that one, honestly. There's a lot of businesses I've worked with that want to outgrow their current capabilities. They try to operate faster than the capacity they truly have.
Yeah.
And it creates unforeseen bottlenecks that ultimately cost a lot more money than they should.
It does.
Right? And a lot of business owners, especially, when they're still in that in-between stage of size of business, they're operators and owners.
Yeah.
And that is a big, risky issue because you don't see what you don't see.
That's true.
And when you're in the mix, right, you're in the weeds, you can't be at 10,000 feet at the same time.
That's
so
true.
You might not be able to see the forest beyond the tree. So I do also say that to highlight, working with an individual like you is not always about you're struggling and you need to find out how to improve. Sometimes it's you want to go faster. You want to find the weaknesses that you just might be too close to see. And there's a lot of benefit in that. So to our audience, coming up next, I'm going to press into the systems thinking side, how leaders avoid random acts of management and build feedback loops that keep performance steady and complexity rising. Welcome back to Biz Talk. If you want more conversations like this, I've got you. Stream Biz Talk and the full Now Media TV lineup live or on demand. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS, or catch the podcast anytime you want on nowmedia.tv. Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. All right, we are back, and I'm still here with Chris Meredith. And now we're going to get kind of practical, right? You know, systems thinking, you know, it really gets thrown around a lot, but most teams still run their business on, well, theories and heroics, you know, tribal knowledge, and last minute saves. And I've seen that a ton in the manufacturing world, if I'm being completely honest. But, you know, I want the real playbook. So I want to know a little bit more about how you build systems that keep winning without burning people out. So to frame this in a way that our audience really gets and they can relate to it is, you know, if growth is the goal, the system is the vehicle, right? You know, so we'll talk about the feedback loops, the bottlenecks, the decision, you know, latency, and how leaders design the environment where the right actions happen even when nobody's watching. Because this is like the blueprint for what every business owner possibly wants in their business. Now, we also understand that it's not one size fits all. It's not cookie cutter. There is a different dynamic. But to dive right in, I want to get to kind of a big question here. You know, when you say systems thinking, what do you mean in plain English and what do you not mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because when you look at systems thinking, when I started using that term, I started looking at scientific definitions. I started looking at academic definitions. Even wrote a couple of papers to the academic world and to the scientific world so they would think I was not trying to steal their theories. And what I think of a system, I think of it, number one, as a living system. And I think of it as components within an organization that connect or that does not connect. And so how they interact with each other. In fact, maybe that's one of the strongest words is the interaction. And the system itself, or the living system itself, is made up of people. It's made up of policies and procedures. It's made up of communication. It's made up of accountability. It's made up of feedback loops. And within all of that, you have your trust components.
That's
huge. So you have those kind of components that make up the system. So the living system is not complicated. It's just all of the internal parts of an organization and how the flows take place between each of those parts, how they hold each other accountable, how they communicate with each other, mm-hmm. how they live with each other, how they have their own standards within each other, and even how they have unwritten things between each other. Trust is one of those things. So.
You know, I like to think of it less like, it's one of the ways that I've explained it kind of similar to others, you know, when you talk about a living system, I always think of it's more like a tree, less like a building.
Yes.
The building's really structural. It's designed, set up an exact type of way, and it doesn't change.
Yes.
Whereas the tree is growing, it's evolving, it's maneuvering, and there's parts that work together, and it might not even be seen that they interact with each other in a way, right? So that's kind of how I've always choose to really think about it. So it keeps it in concept of, okay, things can evolve, things can change. The plan, the structure that worked then might not be what is needed now.
No.
So it does evolve, but what's a hidden constraint you see in growing companies that leadership usually mislabels as a people issue?
Oh, that's a simple one, because ultimately it's inconsistencies, it's a lack of morale, it's a lack of motivation. And I go back to the living system itself. You described it like a tree. I look at it like a car. A car is a structured system. In fact, so when you look at what a system is not, it's not a structure. In fact, so many business people, I can't even tell you how many people ask me what books I read. And I know what they're looking for. They're actually looking for who I'm reading after to see what structure I'm actually building around. And when I tell them, I read what I need at the moment, because ultimately I'm not looking at the body of the car, I'm looking at the gas within the car. And so when leaders start looking around their organization and they see a lack of morale, they see a lack of consistency, they see all of these things taking place, what they're actually doing is looking at a structured system. And so they make a decision that it's a people problem. But it's not really a people problem always. Most of the time, it's how the living system is actually operating.
That's a really good point. I haven't really thought of it in that regard. You know, when you've got two parts working against each other without realizing it, you're going to have problems, and it's going to cause tension. It's going to cause trust issues, and it's going to very easily be disguised as a people problem.
It is.
You know, I would argue that every problem in a business is created by a person, but it's also solved by a person. But
it is.
Then there's the problems that generate out of the non-people type activities.
Yes.
In the structure that you did implement, or at least the system that you did explain. You know, if I gave you 30 days inside a company, what are the first three feedback loops you'd install to stop excessive surprises?
I would, first of all, start with the operational feedback loops. I would look at how their meetings take place. I would look at how the flow takes place. I would look at the communication within that flow. And then I would go from the operational to the front line, those who are actually dealing with the customer base on a regular basis. And then I would end up with the strategic side of it and the leadership side of it and what their feedback loops look like as well. And what I find most of the time, there's a disconnect between those three loops.
I would say I've definitely ran into the same exact situation. And one of the biggest ones I find, no matter what company I've dealt with, it is the people that are actually building the product or performing the service.
Right.
There is a big disconnect between them and leadership on what they're actually experiencing. And this is where I learned kind of early on. If they just have everything they need, information, resources, and, well, also recognition, things seem to go a whole lot better consistently.
They do.
But if you don't have that feedback loop, or if you're scared of that feedback loop,
right.
You're just asking for problems to stay problems as long as possible. You know, and where do leaders accidentally create, you know, decision debt? And how do you reduce decision latency without losing control?
Well, the first thing is that leaders do not get the information they need fast enough. And so that's going to create a debt because they're not hearing, they're not seeing, They're assuming back to assumptions that things are going okay, where the living system is going to communicate that all the way through. And so they make sure they correct that by making sure the living system is in place. So when the proper system is in place, then ultimately you're going to have the flow that you need, and you're not going to have that debt.
That's a fair point. You know, there's also so many opportunities within a business to have redundant communications, to have over-communication, where you have too many people in the mix, too many people. It's like playing the game of telephone sometimes, I found. If you've got information going from this person to this person to this person to this person, where you could cut out three in the middle, you're going to have more accurate information. It's going to be a lot faster and more reliable. And things could also be simplified for those that don't need all of the information.
Yeah.
And that's one consistent problem I see is a misuse of information flow. I run into that problem a lot. And I like you sharing this experience because I think of myself as I'm so early in this career. I'm so young in what I'm doing. Yet a lot of the problems I'm seeing, you're explaining so well. It's like, okay, so it is consistent amongst different businesses and leadership styles and, you know, in teams altogether. So that is a very vital thing for me to understand is, okay, the playing field may change a little bit, but the risks, speed bumps, and roadblocks are all very, very similar. But, you know, real quick, you know, what metrics do you trust as you know, leading indicators of healthy growth versus, you know, vanity signals that make leaders feel safe?
Alignment, number one. Making sure there's real alignment, making sure there's capacity, making sure there are feedback loops. Those are the metrics I'm actually looking for when I go through that. And leaders, if they really are empowering the system, guess what happens? They don't lose control. They gain greater influence because of empowering the system the way they empowered it. But those are the metrics that I'll look for. Capacity, feedback loops, empowerment, those types of things.
I love the simplicity.
Yeah,
I love the simplicity. I found as soon as you overcomplicate anything, you lose effectiveness so quickly. And this conversation is so powerful. Where can our audience find you? Where can they follow your work and get in contact with you if they want to work with you?
Well, I can be found at my website, which is thinkmcs360.com. Or you can email me directly at chris@thinkmcs360.com.
And once again, on the simplicity side of things, I absolutely love it. Like my mentor, the person that guided me into this field and helped me take over a company young, he always said, if you make anything harder than cardboard and crayon, you're inviting failure. You're inviting complication that, you know, so keep things simple because you're going to guarantee more people can win.
Oh, yeah.
And I find that to be extremely important. You know, briefly, while I've got a little bit time left in this segment, I'm curious, what is your reason why behind this? What about this really drives you?
In the beginning, it was about me because I wanted to be the leader. But really what drives me, my why, is the empowerment of people. I want to see people succeed at every single level. I want to see CEOs lead at the highest level. I want to see the greatest results. I want to see junior VPs learn how to become senior VPs. I want to see senior people within companies that want to become partners within companies. I simply want to see people succeed. It's that simple.
And that right there is the heart of service.
That is
a servant's heart that just wants people to win. So to our audience, up next, I want to connect systems thinking to culture and execution, how I build a leadership cadence that keeps teams accountable, engaged, and moving in the same direction. So don't go anywhere. Grab some coffee. Grab pen and pad. Grab popcorn if you need to. But we'll be right back on BizTalk. Welcome back to Biz Talk. I'm still with Chris Meredith, and this is where it gets real. If it wasn't real enough before, you know, for you already, but because plenty of companies have values on the wall, not enough companies have values in the calendar, the meeting rhythm, the hiring decisions, and the way conflict gets handled. So I want to talk about culture as a system built on purpose, reinforced by process. And I know that can be like a mouthful for some people and it can seem really complex, but to break this down really simple, at least as simple as I can, you know, the behaviors may, you know, may really reward the system, but my system that I've worked with tends to reward the behaviors.
Yes.
And I find that to be a great way to not only just continue to recognize individuals, but to build a culture that continuously wants to grow and improve. But, you know, we'll dig into operating cadence and just, you know, making decisions the right way and accountability loops, which is vitally important, easily overlooked, and how leaders build trust without creating dependency. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in our field and what we do, it's easy for us to accidentally create dependency too if we're not careful. But, you know, diving into this, you know, when you walk into a company, what are the observable behaviors that tell you the culture is strong or quietly breaking apart?
There's a number of them, but to simplify it for time's sake, I look at their clarity, I look at their purpose, I look at their why, I look at the morale that exists within the organization itself. Because so many times that, again, leaders assume that because the core values are on the wall that everybody's bought into the core values. And so the behaviors that you're actually observing, and it's amazing, I can interview, I'll give you a good example. I was with a client recently and the president of the company gave me full openness to go into and visit with every single person in the company. And so, or at least their senior people. And so what I did is I created an assessment and I actually did an assessment individually based on their job descriptions.
Okay.
And what I found was, is when I asked the president of the company what their top three priorities was in the company, and then I began to ask the employees that same question, there was a total disconnect there. And a part of that disconnect created a lack of morale, it created the inconsistencies. It certainly didn't clarify the purpose and the why behind what they were doing. And so those are the type of things that I actually can look at and see, usually within a very, very short period of time, and then start diagnosing it from there.
I like the angle you took with that. One of the first things I love to do when diving into a business, especially if operations has any kind of struggle, one of the first things I like is to ask people around the office, around the facility, wherever it is, what is the company's reason why?
Yeah.
Why do they do this? More often than not, they don't have an answer.
Right.
And if they can't tie their why to the company's why, you're not going to have the dedication. You're not going to have the in-depth desire to want to make the results consistently.
Sure.
And a disconnect in why and purpose is a silent killer of a business.
Yes.
Because who's going to be like, who's going to really take the time to go from their station or their office and be like, hey, you know, why do we actually do this?
Right.
That's something that should be inherently obvious to everybody at all times, because the why is the engine behind what you're doing in the first place. But, you know, what's one leadership habit that looks productive but actually erodes culture over time?
Yeah, that one is a big one, because a very good question, because ultimately leaders who think that they have to be involved in every single decision that takes place, that number one helps, it really shakes up the psychological safety within the organization itself. It certainly takes away clarity. And you'd be surprised, well, you really wouldn't, I'm sure, but of how many leaders actually say to me, I know I need to empower people, but I have to do this.
There's always a but.
And yeah, it's always the but. I call it the but religion.
Yeah.
But ultimately,
I'm stealing that, by the way. That's good.
But ultimately, because of that but religion, they really do. But it goes back to them. It goes back to their own insecurities. Mm. It goes back to their own identity. And it goes back to their lack of confidence and trust. And they think they're losing control by doing all of those things like we were talking about earlier. But actually, by empowering the system, they're actually gaining a greater influence all the way through.
It's a way that I like to look at this. You know, in the way of a servant leader, the way up is down.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning,
no question,
the higher you climb this ladder everyone seems to talk about, or this pyramid that people think it is, is just the more people you serve.
Yeah, yeah.
And the better you are understanding, you're a servant of the people.
That's exactly
your job
right.
is to make sure they have what they need when they need it.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, fight away the dangers that yeah. come ahead so they can keep operating. It changed that perspective. Yeah. At least it did a lot for me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was in a position once upon a time, way younger than I should have been in this position, where I had a lot of power.
Yeah.
Had a lot of financial strength as well. And it turned into a sense of pride, ego, arrogance.
Does.
And then I turned into a tyrant when things got wrong.
It does.
And I was very blessed to have people around me that pointed that out to me yeah. with love. And
yes.
say, hey, you need to fix this because you're going to lose your team.
Yes.
And if it wasn't for that, I would not be where I am today. You know, that humble approach, okay, I'm just a servant of the people. Instead of telling them what to do, I ask what do they need.
Yes, yes.
And then I communicate with them, here's what we need as a
yes.
team. And it's just sharing that perspective. You know, and on that aspect of micromanagement and accountability, you know, how do you define accountability in a way that doesn't turn into fear, politics, or the terrifying micromanagement?
Clarity, not pressure, empowerment. Those kind of things begin to eliminate that fear, that trust, that giving of ownership to your team. When you give them those types of things and you really trust them and empower them to do it, fear is eliminated immediately. Fear happens because, back to your earlier question, people, leaders, try to insert themselves in everything. They think they have to rescue every situation. I had a situation just recently where I had a client call and let me know that ultimately there was a mishap on the team and there was a mistrust that was broken. And I said, well, how did you handle it? And they said, well, I'm coming to you and I think I need to go to the president of the company. And I said, no, take her to lunch.
Yep.
And I said, get to know her a little bit and bring some empowerment. And you'll find that her interests are probably the same as yours. It was just a little personality conflict.
Mm.
And she called me later and she said, I'm her best friend now.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, eliminating fear is key. But doing that comes through empowerment, ownership, things like that.
You know, you actually kind of opened my eyes to this in a little bit of a different light than I'm used to. Because when I think of leadership and I think of that empowerment side of things, I think of it very closely to it's being a parent.
Yeah.
Leadership and parenting are the same thing.
Yeah.
So when I think of leading others, I think of it as if I treat them as if they're my own child. It's unconditional
yes.
love.
Yes.
I genuinely want your success. I want your growth. I
yes.
want the betterment of you. But sometimes that comes with, well, tough love, hard conversations.
Oh yeah.
But empowering you is important. So
yes.
like I have a toddler at home. He's like raising Johnny Knoxville or Steve-O. He's dangerous, but he's brave. Where sometimes I say his bravery is much greater than his survival instincts. Well, instead of, you know, getting on top of him or beating him down when he makes a mistake or something breaks or falls, I want to encourage the bravery to try something outside of his comfort zone, to make the mistake, to learn from it, and to move forward rather than, hey, you messed this up. Now I'm going to scare him from ever trying it again. Whereas, you know, it's that empowerment side of things. So I like the way you put it. And instead of bringing it and raising the scale of it and escalating so high, break it down, slow down, get to know the person, understand their world a little bit, who they are, and the answers are going to become pretty clear.
Oh, yeah.
You know, usually.
Yeah.
Now, some people are just not a good fit for their environment. Sometimes the way to love them is to help them get to a better environment,
exactly.
something that's going to be more suiting for them, right? And that's one I'm always still trying to figure out and learn more. But, you know, you've coached senior leaders, you know, what's a concrete way to help them shift from being the answer to building a team that produces answers?
Yeah, that's a really good question as well. And the way I do that is look at the what ifs.
Mm.
What if you weren't having to do this? Instead of telling them they're doing it wrong, go to the what ifs. What if your team was doing this? What would it allow you to do differently? And what if they were communicating within themselves? What if they were holding each other accountable? What if they had their own feedback loops? How much would your role change? And how would your capacity increase? And what would you be able to do as a leader to grow your organization even more effectively? So I go to the what ifs.
It sounds like you're diving into the mythical thing of delegation, right? And it's so hard to delegate when you know you've built something that you feel proud of. It's finally working. You know, a lot of people don't see the trials and tribulations, the late nights, the hard battles you have to fight. Yet then you realize, okay, I'm at a limitation here. I've got to be able to pass this on to somebody else and trust that it will be okay.
Yes.
So my rule of thumb is if they can do it 80% as good or as effective as I can, I am ecstatic with that.
Absolutely.
But I believe my responsibility as a leader is for those people to become better than me at that thing.
Yes, I
agree. If they can be better than me at that, I've done my job as a leader. And that's totally something that is easily overlooked. You know, pride and ego tend to get in the way of things a lot. And that's one of the big ones I find in delegation where it gets in the way. So this segment has been extremely powerful. I really appreciate the expertise that you're bringing to this and the experience there because you're putting it so elegantly. You're putting it in a way where I'm looking back at my career so far and I'm realizing a lot of this stuff took beating my head against the wall and failing a lot to understand it, yet you see it so clearly. And I appreciate you sharing it today because I know to our audience that there's a lot of value in this. But, you know, as we get to move on to the next segment, our final segment, I'm going to ask you to bring it home. Let's wrap it all together. Leading through uncertainty, keeping teams resilient, and building a legacy of leadership that outlasts a single quarter. So don't go anywhere. If there's a segment you don't want to miss, I promise you it's this one. Welcome back to Biz Talk. Don't miss Biz Talk or any Now Media TV favorites streaming live or on demand. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and listen to the podcast anytime at nowmedia.tv. Now Media TV is business, culture, and so much more. We are 24/7, so you can't miss us. We are back with a final segment of Biz Talk, and with me is still Chris Meredith, and this has been an incredible interview so far. I've got to say, the depth that you bring to this conversation is absolutely incredible, and you talk about it so effortlessly with so much passion. Yet, you know, something we were able to mention in between segments here is the weight behind everything.
Yes.
People don't truly get to see the depth until they're walking in it.
That's true.
But in this segment, you know, we're talking leadership DNA, systems thinking, and culture by design. Now, I want the pressure tested version. Right, you know, what leaders do when the market shifts, the team is tired, and the old playbook just stops working altogether. So to frame this in a way that the audience can relate to, they can connect with, they've experienced themselves, you know, resilience without chaos. That's a pretty complicated thing there, right? It that's another one of those things with brevity, right? Resilience without chaos. You know, the goal is to leave viewers with a clear, grounded blueprint they can truly apply even this week, right? You know, especially leaders navigating uncertain and scaling strains. So digging into your beautiful brain and all the experience you really have with this, I'm going to start with a bit of a heavy question here. You know, when uncertainty hits, what's the first thing you stabilize? People, priorities, or process? And how do you really make that choice?
Yeah, I love the question because ultimately leaders quite often think that people is the first place you go. But that goes back to looking at a physical structure rather than a living system. And sometimes, even if people are not performing at the level that they need to, what really that goes back to is the priorities. They're unclear about where the priorities are. And when they become really clear about where the priorities are, that will allow you to see whether the people, there needs to be adjustment in that part of the system or in the communication phase, et cetera. But the priorities are the key to that.
I would very much agree because in the midst of chaos, when things get real tight or there's a lot of pressure, those priorities can really subconsciously shift where people might not recognize it, but ultimately the results will show it. Right, you know, many business owners, they don't understand what they're truly capable of until the pressure really hits. Until, you know, something changes, they lose a big client or customer, and now they've got to rework the business, the structure, the system, the ecosystem they've built. You know, I've seen this happen time and time again where, you know, something falls through and all of a sudden it is mayday, panic, big red button, figure this out. Priorities start to shift. It's immediately, let's just find more customers, more clients, more clients, more clients. Yet they're not paying any attention to the back end and they're compromising relationships with their current clients that are still carrying them through. Having it, you know, those identifiers to pinpoint where the priority needs to be is extremely important. And we could not talk about that enough, honestly. But, you know, what does healthy growth look like in the middle of stress? You know, what signals tell you you're scaling responsibly?
Healthy growth stabilizes the system. That's the key to it, is that if the system, or when the system, not if, when the system is actually experiencing tension, that lets you know as a leader exactly where the system is at. And when you actually look at the system itself through healthy growth, you know that the system is flowing like it should flow. And quite often leaders miss that part of it because they misunderstand the fact that the system itself is telling you where your capacity is and how you're in line with your priorities.
I like that. You're highlighting some things that, like I said, you know, this is the same reason why LeBron James has a coach. Not because the coach is better than him, but because, you know, the coach can see the forest beyond the tree that might be standing in his way.
That's very true.
And I find that to be extremely important, especially in those moments when inevitably things get tight, things get complicated, you know, that stress hits. It's having another perspective, another set of eyes that can make the difference. You know, and you've built your work around mentorship and continuous study. I'm curious, what's one principle you've changed your mind about as your leadership has truly matured?
You're actually bringing it to where we back to where we began. because ultimately, it's not about me. When that seems like such a simple statement, but when I really realized it wasn't about me, it wasn't about my performance, it wasn't about how good I was at something. It wasn't about how well I could speak. I do a lot of public speaking, but it wasn't about how well any of that was. It was about the message that I was trying to communicate, and it was about the people that I was communicating the message to. And it was about understanding how to go to those people where they're at and lead them to where they needed to go. One of the biggest lessons that I learned was from an employee. He came to me once, and here we were scaled up nationally, multi-billion dollar company, and he comes to me and he says, "You're really good at teaching, you really know what you're talking about," but he said, "There's a point being missed here." He said, "They're not getting it." And that's when I learned the difference between teaching and education. A major difference, because in teaching, you're telling people what to think. In education, you're telling them how to think about what you told them to think about.
There's a really good distinction there, and that's something extremely important to know. So if I was you, I would have grabbed a pen and pad and wrote that one down. I kind of feel like I need to now. I mean, that right there is gold. That is gold. That is wisdom that is gained through. Yeah. I've got this thing I kind of think about, you know, and you're expressing a lot of wisdom right now. Now, you can gain knowledge by stepping back, watching the battle in the distance. You can learn things from it.
Yeah.
But wisdom is gained when you're in the fire, you're in the fight, you're doing these things, and you come out of it with an understanding of not just the knowledge, but how to apply that knowledge.
So true. Yeah.
And I find that to be vital. It's extremely important to soak that in when you get it. So for me, I'm trying to soak this up as much as I can. We talk about a lot of similar things, but you bring a depth to it that I think only years of me doing this is really going to bring. But you know, if I gave you the attention of every CEO watching, what's one decision they should make in the next 7 days to reduce chaos and increase the momentum of the business and the team?
Clarify your top priorities. Without any question in my mind, you cannot communicate at every level. You can't expect at every level. You can't see the results at every level. And you can't expect the system to flow like the system is supposed to flow if those priorities are not clear.
Yeah.
I believe when there's no vision, people are scattered.
Yeah.
And when they're scattered, They're scattered in their mind. They're scattered in their loyalty. They're scattered in their morale. So clarify your top priorities. That is key.
I would say that is a very good way to bridge gaps of communication, no doubt. Because like you said, you know, there is limitations of communication capability. And if you don't understand that, that is back to assumptions.
Yes, it is. Right?
Assumptions are a big killer of communication, understanding, and and alignment altogether. I think when you brought that up in the first segment, it's sinking in more and more and more now as we continue to talk. And these questions really do highlight the depth of and risk of assumptions.
Yes.
Truly. You know, and when it's all said and done, what do you want leaders to remember about the kind of legacy they build through systems, not just speeches?
Generational transfer is key to legacy. Legacy is not really about us, as I mentioned earlier, or about the leader themselves. Legacy is about the longevity and the sustainability through succession. And that's where generational transfer comes in. It comes into making sure there's clarity in that process, making sure there's empowerment in that process, but making sure the process can sustain. I'll give you a really good example. I left a company once, and one of the board members called me not long after that, and he said, "You should have stayed." He said, "It got better after you left." And I said, "Then I did my job."
Yes.
Because ultimately it's about the sustainability through generations, regardless of whether I'm remembered or not. What's important is that the mission is accomplished forever and forever, and it continues to get better with each generation that follows.
I could not agree with you more. You know, it leads back actually to the philosophy of my firm and me and my business partner. It's, you know, we don't want businesses and people to depend on us. We want you to outgrow us.
Yes.
Our job is to work ourselves out of the job.
We want you to
learn, to develop, to evolve into a way where you no longer need us. You can operate and grow continuously without this external force.
Yes.
And that is where you build testimonies. It's far beyond, you know, trying to create dependency and keep a certain revenue stream coming in. It's you genuinely want to create an impact that's lasting far beyond you. And that, to me, is I do this not for a big paycheck. I do this for legacy. I worked in big companies. I ran companies. And honestly, money is not the driving force for me anymore. It really, truly isn't. It's what am I going to leave behind when I'm gone? And what example am I leaving for my children in doing this?
If I could say it this way, Ron, to summarize it, systems thinking, or living systems thinking, is a guardianship of ideas, a guardianship of influence, it's a guardianship of legacy, and it's a guardianship of human development.
Yeah, that's very well said. That's very quotable, actually. That's I'm going to watch this back later, and I'm going to actually write that one down. You know, thank you so much for being here. This has been an absolute masterclass. And here's what I'm really taking away from this. Growth isn't the problem. Undisciplined growth is. When leaders build feedback loops, clarify decision rights, and really design culture on purpose, performance becomes, truly repeatable. And people stop, you know, paying the price for chaos. You know, to everyone watching, choose one system to strengthen this week. One loop, one meeting cadence, one accountability agreement, and watch how fast your business calms down and truly levels up. Again, I'm Ryan Herpin. Thank you for joining me on BizTalk, and we'll see you next time.